look, the reason I wanted to do a pop art show was that it really came from thinking about Australian art in the 1960s and realising that we had quite a really sort of dynamic pop scene here which hasn't been shown. And then looking at international pop from that period, seeing the connections and realising that Australian art had never been shown with international pop art. So that's where that desire came from. It also was a personal interest for me. I thought it was some really amazing work being done during that time. And art, which is a real precursor for our current moment. It's as if social media and the internet have made Andy Warhol's 15 Minutes of Fame become real for everyone. So for me, it was just to look back at that period, see what was going on, and situate Australia in this much broader international dialogue.
And is that why you've used popism in the title? Of course, referencing the famous Paul Taylor exhibition at the NGV.
Absolutely, which of course the title for that was taken from Andy Warhol's 1980 memoir of the 1960s. It was really to take pop into a longer period because pop shows traditionally run from the mid-50s through to about 1972, whereas in Australia, this is returned to a pop imagery in the late 70s, which also happens internationally as well, particularly in America. So it's a chance to look at that longer view of pop art and sort of talk about the continuities rather than the quite false stop, which curators have often put in that early 70s period.
And do you think there's a different sort of take on Australian pop? How does it manifest itself here that might be different to how it manifests itself in New York or London?
There is a different take, absolutely. And I think with the, pop does really emerge internationally around the same time because people are sharing this sort of saturation of mass media, advertising, film, television, the 1950s. So people's sort of visual life has become one of popular culture. It's not high art, it's not the museums, it's the things you see in magazines and television, etc. So around the world, artists start to use this. It's a younger generation growing up with it and they use it in their practice. In Australia, there are particular references. There's surfing, there's hot rods, there's Pacific culture and the Annandale Imitation Realists. So they actually look to their own particular environment as well as this international language coming from America and particularly from England. And for you, Glenn, now coming to Chuck Close, what brought you to Chuck Close?
Well, it's interesting, isn't it? Because Chuck's operating, maybe he's a generation younger than the pop artists. They're yes. The generation that are just directly above him. And I wouldn't call Chuck a pop artist. And he worked with photorealism, which sometimes people consider as maybe a second wave of pop art, but he was definitely much more part of the minimalist and conceptualist group within New York. And I think that's where his work comes out of. It's conceptually driven painting. It uses the camera, but they're paintings of photographs rather than being photorealistic. And I think Chuck will appeal to Australian audiences because he's someone that I think a lot of kids, when they go through high school, Chuck is someone that they all look at. People do love skill.
Absolutely.
They love realism. And Chuck sort of delivers those things. But once you get beyond that, it's much deeper and much more conceptually driven,
yes.
Which makes it quite rich.
And I think it's very interesting because conceptual minimal art are happening simultaneously with pop art. And they're part of this reaction against abstraction and abstract expressionism. And pop goes sort of in a very popular vein, as does realism, whereas minimal and conceptual art go to a less accessible vein. So for Chuck to come out of that less accessible vein but make this very accessible art, what's that synergy?
From a sort of populist view, I think there's something about skill that people really love about Chuck's work, and also that sort of drive and that working methodology that he has, that he said, you know, inspirations for amateurs. He just turns up in the studio and he works. And I think people really respond to that in a really... they can understand that, you know, turning up to work, you turn up at the studio and you just get going. It's not about inspiration or some lightning bolt hitting you.
Yeah, and the work looks realist. And of course, the pop artists to begin with were called realists. They were called new realists, factualists. And pop art was seen as copying the real world. So you can see why they get confused with realism and photorealism at the end of the decade, which actually takes quite a different tack.
Chuck is much more interested in the methodology of making work rather than the external factors. It's about actually finding a way to work and then you follow that through to its conclusion. The outside world is a distraction almost to what happens within the studio. And I think that's the difference between, say, what Chuck's doing and what pop artists are doing. But it's interesting that Chuck has chosen to paint a lot of the pop artists. He's actually, so there's a portrait of Roy Lichtenstein, there's a Rauschenberg, there's a Jasper Johns. All of those key figures were actually people that were around Chuck and that he engaged with in some way. So I think that's interesting.
That they appear
within his work, but I would never call him a pop artist.
Yeah, so how does Chuck choose his subjects?
I think he chooses the people that are around him. So quite often the artists that he chooses, even though they are well-known names to him, they're his friends.
You know?
And they're people whose face I think he wants to put into his portraits in a very methodical way, rather than, it's not about fame. I think there are a lot of images that Chuck has made of famous people, but I don't think they're about fame as such.
Yeah.
Whereas a pop artist might choose to concentrate on fame, I think Chuck is much more interested in someone's face and how that might look in a picture.
Yeah, and I think that is an interesting difference. If you think about Andy Warhol's portraits, he's not sitting in front of Liz Taylor or Marilyn Monroe and painting them, of course. He's taking an image which is out there, famous, circulating the world already, a promotional image, something from a magazine, and then screen printing that onto the canvas. So he's already well removed from that subject, and he's taking something which has become an icon in a sense, embodies this person, but without any real connection with that person. It's the idea of them as much as anything, and that's what he works with. Whereas Chuck, there's something about that hand-painted quality, and I assume he's working from life.
No, he's working from photography, so it is interesting. There's an interesting link in that Warhol's painting an image of someone.
Yes.
Chuck is painting a photo of someone. So they are sort of distanced from the world.
Does Chuck take the photograph?
But he takes the photographs, or in collaboration with the photographer.
Right.
They take the photographs.
And what's this process of working from that photograph into the final painting?
He chooses the subject, and I think he doesn't do commissions, but he finds the subject that he wants to photograph. He takes their photograph, and he'll take a series of images, and then he'll choose one that he thinks could be worked up into a painting or into a print.
Yes.
And then he grids it up and he sort of works from there. So it is very methodical. And I was lucky enough to go to his studio to watch the way he worked. And he was working on a huge canvas, but he was working on squares this big, you know, that were making up the picture. And he was working on a line across a sort of 2 meter wide space. And the painting was sort of dropping up and down as he worked on each strip.
Yeah.
So he's always working very close. And then when you move away, the face appears. So he's using print processes in a way.
To make the paintings. Yeah, isn't it interesting? I think it's often pop art's been positioned as de-skilling and how they work. And I actually refute that because I think pop artists were re-skilling.
Yeah, I think so too.
They weren't using traditional techniques that I learned in art school. They were using techniques from the commercial world, from advertising, from car manufacturing, from spray painting, from plastics, and actually learning new methodologies and taking them into their work. So,
and screen printing in particular.
Screen printing in particular. But I think that skill's often, it's not necessarily visible in the final product because the hand is removed from that process. So people mistake them for being mass-produced. I mean, often they're not mass-produced at all. They're very painstakingly made.
Yeah, and the printed image, I mean, Chuck's show that we're taking is predominantly printmaking, so etching, screen printing, paper pulp, photography, photogravure, jacquard tapestries. He's been informed by printmaking so much, the methodology of printmaking, about laying down colours, but also I think he's intrigued by this idea that you can make a unique object over and over.
Yes, and repeat them.
Yeah. And then those processes of printmaking, of pulling images apart colour by colour, feeds back into the painting.
Yes.
And I think that happens with a lot of pop artists.
Yeah.
Wayne, I'm super excited about Look Mickey and how you got your hands on it.
It's an excellent question. Look Mickey, of course, is Lichtenstein's first ever comic book painting. It's in the National Gallery in Washington. And what can I say? It took quite some curatorial arm wrestling to secure that work, but we did it, which is great. The National Gallery were very open. When you're working on a large international show, we've got over 35 lenders from around the world for this exhibition. There's a lot of footwork which goes on behind the scenes to secure works. Some museums are very open to lending, some are not. The National Gallery, when I met with them, said I could have one key work from their collection. So I chose the most important pop painting they had. And they gave it, which
really
due respect. So Yeah, I think with the show, we've been lucky to secure some very major works for it. With any show, there's a few things which you don't get, but I'm very happy with what we have got.
And we've been lucky with Chuck's show, is Chuck is a living artist, still living and working in New York, and all of the works are coming, most of the works are coming from Chuck, and also we've got work right up to the present. So
yes,
there's a series of works that Chuck's just finished that yes, have not been shown.
Fantastic.
At all, that are coming.
This great energy.
One of the really great things that we're showing is the National Gallery of Australia purchased in the 1970s.
Yes.
Chuck's first print called Keith, and it's a mezzo tint. Hmm. Incredibly complicated way of making a print. And to actually set out, he was working and someone said, we want to make prints with you in San Francisco, Crown Point Press. And he chose the most difficult method of making a print. Mezzo tint's quite a time-consuming, you're sort of working out of the black into the white. He made the biggest mezzo tint anyone had ever made.
Yes.
The National Gallery of Australia purchased that print, but they also purchased the plate and they purchased all of the proofs as he was making them. So it's an incredible series of works. And Chuck showed that work at MoMA in, I think, early 1970s. And the National Gallery bought it from that show, basically. And he's yes, not seen it since. And we're quite excited to actually have that as part of the show.
No, that is really exciting. And the National Gallery has an extraordinary print collection.
Yeah.
The collection material across that period is remarkable, I have to say. With the exhibition, I mean, I've not seen the full list of works. There's paintings and prints, or it's mainly prints?
It's nearly all printmaking. There's a number of paintings, but there's also yeah, jacquard tapestry. There's some tapestry works, yeah, new works. There's new prints which are based on photographic methods.
Yes.
And we're also coming from the National Gallery is their major painting, Bob, which is one of
which is great
Chuck's
work,
sort of first series of photorealist portraits.
Yeah.
And Bob is supposedly the most popular painting in the National Gallery. It's up for debate, but that's what we keep hearing. And that's coming to Sydney. So that's
great,
quite exciting to see that in a different context.
Yeah, absolutely.
And Bob is one of those pictures that I think there's sort of a pilgrimage when people go to the National Gallery to go and see it.
Yes.
So it's great to have that in Sydney as well.
Yes, yes, yes. Now, I feel a little bit sorry for the National Gallery because we've taken quite a few of their major pop works as well. So.
Well, it's an amazing collection, so it's good that that's all coming.
It is, absolutely. I mean, one of the things we tried to do with this, with the pop exhibition is construct it from an Australian perspective. So the artists I've included are artists who showed her in the 1960s and 70s, some who were collected here, ones who were known in magazines, etc. So it's been one way to construct parameters for the exhibition. So we have drawn quite a lot from collections in this region as well, which I think gives it sort of added interest.
And using the Art Gallery of New South Wales collection too?
Yes, absolutely. Particularly for the Australian component, we've drawn a lot on our holdings there. Some of the works which have not been exhibited since the 1960s when they were purchased. Daniel Thomas, the curator at the time, had a particular interest in pop art, so it's been great retracing that history and bringing things out. But then bring key works from around the world, like Warhol's Triple Elvis we've got in the show. David Hockney, I asked for four works, thinking we may get one. We got all four, which was fantastic, so he's got a really strong presence in it. Lichtenstein, we've got In the Car as well. We've got The Kitchen Range from Canberra. Wesselman, we've got one of his 5 metre long billboard size still lifes. James Rosenquist, we've got Silver Skies, which is 6.5 metres long. And I think with the pop arts, that shift in scale during that period gets really interesting as well, but it's a bit of a headache when you're doing the shows because freight bills for 6 metre long works coming out of America are very high.
And so. Chuck is the same. I think
yeah,
Chuck became very interested in scale.
Yeah,
also,
it is fascinating. I think something with our show, which is another connection with your shows, I've actually, quite a few of the pop artists in the late 60s, early 70s got interested in realism. So we've got a David Hockney from 72, which is much more realist than his earlier work. We've got Dwayne Hansen included as well, which is pure realism. So just looking at those connections and synergies will really connect nicely across to Chuck Close, I think.
Yeah, I think they're going to be a good pair
yeah,
to see together.
Get the crowds into both.
I think Chuck, when he started to make his sort of mature work in the late 60s, early 70s, portraiture had become an unpopular form. And there
yes,
weren't many people working with portraiture. And I think that could have been something that appealed to Chuck as well, to take this sort of discarded
yes,
genre and reinvigorate it somehow using the tools of minimalism. So I think he sort of breathed fresh air into portraiture. Mm. And I think the pop artists, apart from Warhol, as we said, where it's slightly cynical, they sort of didn't use portraiture so much, did they?
Well, it depends. American artists, I think you're right. British artists continued to use it. Peter Blake's self-portraits during that period are quite remarkable. And he sort of portrays himself as kind of a fan of pop culture. They're quite raw and honest. But you're right. I mean, often the American ones are actually, as I say, painting from, you know, mass media images, not from life in any sense, even though Chuck's doing it from photographs as well. But I think something which is interesting is that many pop artists, a pop scene as being this radical move, and it is radical in taking works from commercial culture into the art gallery and mass media culture, but the genre is often quite traditional. They're still doing still lifes, they're doing a form of portraiture, they're doing landscape. It is interesting how those genres continue within their practice. So things do get mixed up. There's quite traditional strain going through as well, and a way to situate, in some ways, what's different is by including these traditional genres, but making them look new. I think it's more radical for Chuck to come out of a minimal and conceptual background, which has got no connection with portraiture, and then turn to portraiture. Yeah, that's really quite radical.
And would it be safe to say, too, that with your show that it's predominantly painting? Is painting the...
It's a mixture. It's predominantly painting and sculpture, but there's printmaking as well, multiples. There is quite a large sculptural component. There's a small film and moving image component. We've got a much broader film program, not actually in the exhibition, and we're showing that in the theatre instead. There is some interesting pop film during that period, but a lot of it's actually not that great. Or in that good a condition.
Hasn't aged that well.
So I just decided early on, we'll keep that as a theatre program. But painting and sculpture predominantly.
Talking about glamour and celebrity, and it's interesting, one of the things that Chuck has just done recently is a series of photographs for Vanity Fair of, let's say, the most famous people in the world.
Yeah.
But photographed and portrayed quite harshly, almost without makeup. The light is very strong. I think he's just interested in making great images. I think his relationship to fame is not about celebrating it. It's about how do you make art out of this?
Yeah.
How do you make art out of someone's portrait? So fame is treated in a different way to say with pop, where I think it's celebrated. Although there's a bit of a dark heart.
There's a dark heart to it, absolutely. And I think that is a very interesting point because it is celebrated. But you think of Warhol's, some of his most famous images from the 60s, Marilyn Monroe, it's after she's committed suicide. You know, Liz Taylor is a figure who is incredibly popular but has a dark side as well, with addiction problems and problems with her weight, and they're under such scrutiny during that time. President Kennedy is in Rauschenberg's work, he's in Warhol's work as well, but of course he's assassinated too. Jacqueline Kennedy, Warhol's famous portraits of her after Kennedy's shot. So there is this very dark strand which goes through that period. So it's a celebration in a sense, but it also looks at what lies beneath that surface in American culture. And that gets really picked up on the popism artists as well. Cindy Sherman has a real presence in our exhibition. When she's actually in the late 70s and early 80s, presenting herself in the guise of film characters and advertising scenarios. And they're such mute and opaque works because they are emulating these characters, but they're also staging how our perceptions of ourselves are shaped through mass media and culture, how we measure ourselves against it and how it shapes us. And in the 1980s works, that's really interesting, where they turn around and say, hang on, what has all this stuff done to us and how we experience ourselves? Pop art has had, continues to have a very strong influence in Australian practice. It's really interesting how many younger Aboriginal artists have been working with the pop iconography as well, and everyone from Tracy Moffat through Richard Bell for Rico Rene. That's become a real strand in Australian practice. But I think pop is just one of any number of repertoires or styles artists can now embrace and use. But artists still look at that mass media relevance because it gets a message across very quickly at times. So it's very present. Chuck Close, I imagine, has that popularity and resonance as well.
He does, and it's been really surprising as the show's been developed, the amount of artists who completely unexpectedly have said, wow, I can't wait for the Chuck Close show. And artists who are working superficially nothing like Chuck, completely different types of artists.
Yes.
But I think Australia and Sydney in particular are obsessed with portraiture. You only have to look at the Archibald Prize and this sort of crazed feeding frenzy around it. That I think people never get sick of looking at pictures of other people, which is quite compelling and must drive Chuck apart from the sort of conceptual rigour behind what he's doing. It's also this thing that people like looking at pictures of other people.
People do love other people's faces, and they look to read what they can in that face, and they measure themselves against it as well.
Yeah, they do.
And the Archibald Prize, as we know, is like, you know, Sydney's biggest annual art bun fight. it is such a phenomenal here about people wanting to look at each other, and I think Chuck will have that audience response as well, I'm sure.
Yeah, and I think it will throw down the gauntlet to people maybe to say, okay, here's another way of making pictures about people. Here's another form of portraiture.
Yes.
So it'll be interesting always to see. I think you're probably the same as a curator. You think and you hope that they have a resonance beyond the exhibition.
Yeah.
That artists start to pick up and look.
Absolutely. And for me, the resonance I really wanted to have is for people to look at Australian art from the 1960s and 1980s dealing with pop imagery, and for that resonance to go international as well. People are going to look at their Look Mickey in our catalogue, and they're going to see Ken Reinhardt, they're going to see Peter Powlitch, they're going to see Bridget McLean, they're going to see any number of 60s artists here in dialogue with those international peers.
Yeah, which is really great. And the other thing that I think will come out too, and will come out with Chuck as well, is the notion of the handmade.
Yes.
A lot of the pop images, when you see them reproduced, they're so flat.
Yes.
But when you actually see them in the flesh, you realise someone made that.
Yes.
And it's the same with Chuck's, the famous Bob painting or the paintings that you see of Chuck's and the prints that you see, they're reproduced so flat, it's like a machine made it. But when you actually see it, you realise, oh no, there's a hand in there somewhere.
You have that real sense of the artist's presence and the making the work. I think it's going to be fascinating in next year's Archibald Prize, seeing how many Chuck Close entries we get.
I'm sure there's a lot.